Tuned to Truth News on the 24th of August 2011. Welcome to another show. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been swinging between extremes. I've been in a kind of a pendulum of feeling about what's going on the planet right now. And I've been swinging between feeling incredibly angry and indignant to just feeling plain sad. And at the moment, I'm just feeling plain sad. And what I'm most sad about, ironically, is the fact that we have not done enough. And by that I include myself. I include all the people that are reasonably aware of what is going on. And I find it incredibly sad that we just haven't done enough. And there are so many reasons why that is so. You know, we have so many responsibilities hanging around our necks. We have so many threats. We have so little room to maneuver. But unfortunately, those of us who actually are aware of what is going on have the only chance. We have the key to fixing the situation and averting the impending catastrophe. See, the ones that are completely deluded, the ones that are in a complete zombie state, the ones that believe what the media tells them, the ones that are just too oppressed to even know what they believe or too dumbed down to be able to think, they don't really have a chance to do anything. The people who are awake have a chance to do something, and there are a lot of people who are at least moderately awake and aware of what is going on. But unfortunately, those people are not doing enough. In many cases, they're not doing anything. And I number myself in that class too. I try to do what I can, but it is way short of what I know I need to do. And in this show, I want to try and talk us through that a little bit to see why it is that we just can't take action. Because if we could take action, if people would actually stand up to the bullies and use the weight of numbers that we do have, we could turn things around. We really could. I'm absolutely certain of that. But there are these so many psychological blockages. And of course, the biggest one is this feeling that people have that there's no point in doing anything, which is a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you feel that there's no point in doing anything, you won't do anything. And that will then perpetuate the feeling that there's no point in doing anything, especially if everyone feels that way. Now, somehow we got this inculcated into us that there's no point in taking action. But it's not true. See, there really is a point in taking action. And there are so many different ways you can take action. And I'm not necessarily even talking about joining a march. You know, I mean, you can just talk about what's important to those around you. And so many people don't even want to do that. They feel so constrained that they don't even talk about things. You know, you look at what's going on in the world and you can tell that you're being massively conned. You can tell straight away that there are massive crimes being committed in your name with your taxpayer dollars. I mean, look at what's going on in Libya right now. Since the beginning of the NATO operation, there has been a total of 19,751 sorties, including 7,459 strike sorties. Strike sorties conducted just since August, 105. Strike sorties conducted since the 20th of August, 36. These figures do not include the extensive bombing raids directed against civilian targets conducted on the 21st and 22nd of August. The bombing is part of NATO's mandate to protect the lives of civilians. So, in Libya, and we are a major supporter of the operation in Libya, we may not have troops on the ground, but make no mistake, we are a major supporter of a crime against humanity which is being committed right now as we speak. Civilians are being targeted. Criminal Al-Qaeda gangs have been funded and sponsored by Western military and assisted by special forces to go on killing rampages in Libya. This has all been sold to you as some kind of moral, humanitarian exercise. And of course, you know it's not true, but it's just continually coming at you through the news, through the television, through the radio, and you don't know what to do, and you just don't do anything. That's the problem. You don't do anything. So what can you do? It's a hard one. What can you do? Well, we at Truth News, we are part of the 9/11 Truth Movement. And the 9/11 Truth Movement, make no mistake about it, the 9/11 Truth Movement is central and essential to the future of democracy and the future of a peaceful world. Because the 9/11 Truth Movement goes to the core of what is going on in the world with militarism and lying governments and the distortion of morality, the distortion of science, and the perversion of morality. The 9/11 Truth Movement is so important, I just can't say it enough. And we are involved in some protests, which will be taking place on the 10th of September, and a screening of a very important film by the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth in Sydney. And if you're in Sydney and you're listening to the show, please come to our events. I believe that's extremely important. I know it's a small part of the whole puzzle, but there's something that you can do to support us and to support what we are trying to do. Now, if more people had come to the 9/11 protest that we have organized in the past, if we had the numbers at a higher threshold, we would have forced the media to take account of what we were doing. We actually did some protests outside the ABC studios, but we only had 10, 20 people at a time. If we had 200 people, they'd have to report on us. I'm not saying they would report in a favourable way. They'd probably say some gang of weirdos is standing outside the ABC studios. But it would be a start, okay? Of course they would ridicule us. But you see, you've got to go through that process that Gandhi talked about of being ignored, of being ridiculed, of being laughed at, of being violently opposed, till finally you win. But really, we're not very far down the track in terms of that process. Now, another thing that you can do is support the no carbon tax protests that are happening all over the country. And these have made much more progress than the 9/11 truth movement has. But they still are failing, and they're partly failing due to lack of numbers. The convoy of no confidence, which was widely promoted and was believed to include at least 1,000 trucks, when it finally turned up in Canberra, seemed to be a much smaller number of trucks. Now, some of this is media spin. Some of this is a negative campaign that the media is running to try and make it look like it fizzled out. But I think also there is some truth in it, which is that a lot of the momentum was lost and people didn't go all the way to Canberra. Some of the people in their trucks turned around and went back home. Now, this is really unfortunate. But don't worry about it. That's past. Okay, that's over now. There is more to do. There is more coming. The carbon taxes have to be opposed at all costs. They have to be prevented. We have to make that happen. And of course, the solution is not to bring in the Liberal Party. We know that. We know the Liberal Party's policies are just another false agenda, which can easily morph into the same thing because the Liberal Party has not disavowed the lies that climate science is based on. The Liberal Party does not stand up for truth and justice and science anymore than the Labour Party does. So don't expect a change of government to solve anything. Just make your voice heard. Join the protests, talk to people, communicate, reach out to us. Come to us with any ideas that you've got. This is a very, very bad situation. The government is absolutely determined to bring in the carbon tax. The people almost universally are against it. I know that there are a lot of people who are for the tax, but relatively speaking, proportionally to the population, they are of a small minority. Almost everyone is against it, but most of those people who are against it, or are at least very skeptical of it and very unsure about it and who don't understand why we really have this tax, most of these people aren't doing or saying anything. And that's got to change, folks. The big middle group of people who isn't doing anything have to be mobilized. They have to be radicalized. We'll be back after the break with some more breaking news.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception, and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to the show. And at this point, I'd like to welcome Josh Jackson into the discussion.
How goes it all out there in cyberland, listening to us on the old boo 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 boo? And
howdy, Mr. Jackson.
Yeah, what's the big story? Well, the big story is, of course, Libya.
Yeah, I've been ranting a little there about Libya, about the number of I read out, Josh, just for your benefit. I read out some numbers of the number of actual military attacks: 19,751 sorties, including 7,459 strike sorties, have been conducted since the beginning of military actions, and since the 20th of August, 105.
Yeah, but you see, this whole thing is really hard to gauge. Like, is that propaganda? Is it? Because the whole thing is one big psyop. As I'm researching this this war, and that's what it is.
Oh, it's a war.
I'm realizing that there is just so much disinformation. It's unbelievable. There's so much disinformation, and so, for instance, you know, we had Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam. Gaddafi, he was meant to be captured or dead in some reports, and now he just turned up on Monday, you know, near his in some town, rallying up the troops, rallying up the people, saying, "No, it's all war." They cut off the media. They sent off. They started sending mass amounts of text messages to thousands of people. This was NATO, I'm guessing. You know, it truly is an info war, as Alex Jones would put it. And if you look at it, what's going on, it really, really is an info war. I mean, it's all about the information people are getting and aren't getting, and it's all about the disinformation people are getting and aren't getting. I mean, it's truly unbelievable. You really can't believe anything anymore.
Although one thing you can be sure of is that there are a lot of bombs being dropped and a lot of munitions being used and people are being killed. There is absolutely no doubt about that.
Yeah, and absolutely.
You know, and the people who are suffering are just like mothers with children, you know, old people, you know, just ordinary people trying to get to work or trying to get to open their shops because that's their livelihood. I mean, despite all the disinformation and the truth or untruth of it about whether how real the rebels are, whether they're a totally fake thing, whether there is some real rebellion going on, whether it is totally co-opted, whether it is Al-Qaeda and what is Al-Qaeda, whether Gaddafi is a man of the people or just a dictator who is purely cold and cruel. And I'm not going to take a position on any of those. I'm just saying what's really happening is that there are massive crimes being committed against ordinary people, you know? I mean, there is murder going on, Josh. There is mass killing going on. There are bullets. There are just bullets, stray bullets. You know what it's like in a – I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can only guess. But imagine what it's like in a war zone when people are firing guns – all the time, and a stray bullet can just go through a wall and kill you. I mean, this happens all the time. This happens
I mean, how is anyone meant to get shopping, groceries?
Yeah.
How is anyone meant to get educated? Well, they're getting educated, and that's in hate. How is anyone meant to live? Honestly, quite honestly. And, you know, what we're seeing, though, is, you know, from the Western side, we're seeing the Americans saying, "Oh, that we're not at war. We're not at war." But there is literally, you know, from sources that I've looked at, pretty good sources, that there are, you know, hundreds of American troops down there, part of the NATO forces. They're getting killed as well, but they're not admitting it So, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, they're putting their bodies on ice. And in a couple of months' time, you hear about all these helicopter crashes and car crashes where U.S. soldiers have been, you know, affected. And they'll sort of blame it on that because they don't want to really say, because it's bad for Obama to say, oh, we're in another war now. But it really looks that way. We're also getting reports of Western and Arab special forces in there, right, you know, leading up this rebellion, and a lot of this rebellion is Al Qaeda. And like you said, what is Al Qaeda? Who knows? But it really looks like they're wanting to basically build all these countries led by now these Al Qaeda forces. You'll see women starting to wear massive headdresses again and all this quite fundamental stuff over in Libya. You'll see, and then it'll build this, you know, that's what the globalists want. I mean, the globalists really do want this sort of continuous war. And this is a perfect way to set it up. I mean, building, getting these, you know, basically arming a bunch of, you know, I guess kids that are highly influenced by propaganda, and then they get labelled Al Qaeda, and the rest will be you know, the future.
Look, it's both a criminal scam and it is both crimes against humanity, because we know that when the economy is in the kind of desperate stages of collapse that the US economy is in now, this is when militarism becomes a huge industry, because it's economically productive, because you blow things up, and every time you blow something up, you've got to replace that thing, and yeah. A war is a kickstart for the economy. And of course, let's just go back 10 years. Let's roll back 10 years, right? Because in 2001, that was the height of the dot-com collapse, and there was a really disastrous economic situation brewing from around about mid 2000 to mid 2001, and there were a lot of economic predictions, a lot of trends forecasting that were saying that the US was going to go into a major inflationary recession. I remember it from that time. There were all these predictions that things were going to get really bad. And, of course, 9/11 came along, and immediately after 9/11, there was a further, you know, economic downturn for a little while. But then once the military machine got going, do you remember everything started to pick up again and things started growing again? Why? Because they were just guns blazing, just tearing into other countries, just ripping countries apart, blowing things up, and that giant security industry that grew up around that to do with the fear of terrorism was just a major kind of like money thing, you know?
No, absolutely. It was a massive industrial push towards this.
Yeah, yeah.
But the amazing amount of spin and deception that's in the media about this war is really becoming highlighted. Like, you know, that they'll say, "Oh, the rebels have taken over this and that," and you know, now hitting the compound, and then it turns out, well, you know, it's all overbaked. And they aren't actually in any of the towns, but they are in some of them. And it's smaller. The insurgence is actually smaller than what they're saying it is. And
well, I believe according to Gaddafi's son, and this may also be disinformation, but he said it was a trap. He said, you know, we let them come into the city so we could ambush them. Maybe that's true.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is what happened it's the art of war, right? You sort of
absolutely.
You allow them in, and then you ambush. It's not new, and so it really is hard to know what to believe. That's for sure.
It certainly is.
There's also reports of 144 tons of gold that's sitting in under the compound. And, you know, I mean, who knows what that's all about. 144 tons, this is quite a bit of cash right there at the current going rate of, what is it, $1,600 an ounce now?
Right, yeah, yeah. Is it? What was the price? Could you give that again?
I think it was $1,600 an ounce now.
I think it might be a little higher than that, Josh. I'll double check that after the break.
Yeah, sure.
I'd like to get you for the next segment. Are you good to come back for one more segment, Josh?
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Yeah, 1,843, sorry, far out.
Thanks. I've got a great song here. It's by Eric Bogle. It's called "And the Band Played Waltzing Matilda." Hope you enjoy it.
Now when I was a young man, I carried me pack, and I lived the free life on the rover. From the Murray's green basin to the dusty outback, well, I waltzed my Matilda all over. Then in 1915, my country said, "Son, it's time you stop rambling, there's work to be done." So they gave me a tin hat and they gave me a gun, and they marched me away to the war. And the band played Waltzing Matilda as the ship pulled away from the quay. And amidst all the cheers, the flag waving and tears, we sailed off for Gallipoli. And how well I remember that terrible day, how our blood stained the sand and the water, and of how in that hell that they called Suvla Bay, we were butchered like lambs at the slaughter. Johnny Turk, he was waiting, he'd primed himself well, he showered us with bullets and he rained us with shell, and in 5 minutes flat he'd blown us all to hell. Nearly blew us right back to Australia, but the band played Waltzing Matilda when we stopped to bury our slain. We buried ours and the Turks buried theirs. Then we started all over again. And those that were left, well, we tried to survive in that mad world of blood, death and fire. And for 10 weary weeks I kept myself alive, though around me the corpses piled higher. Then a big turkey shell knocked me arse overhead, and when I woke up in me hospital bed and saw what it had done, well, I wished I was dead. Never knew there was worse things than dying. Thought I'll go no more waltzing Matilda all around the green bush far and free, to hum tent and pegs, a man needs both legs. No more waltzing Matilda for me. So they gathered the crippled, the wounded, the maimed, and they shipped us back home to Australia. the legless, the armless, the blind, the insane, those proud wounded heroes of Suvla. And as our ship pulled into circular quay, I looked at the place where me legs used to be, and thank Christ there was nobody waiting for me. To grieve, to mourn, and to pity. But the band played Waltzing Matilda as they carried us down the gangway. But nobody cheered, they just stood and stared. Then they turned all their faces away. And so now, every April, I sit on my porch and I watch the parade pass before me. And I see my old comrades, how proudly they march, reviving old dreams of past glories. And the old men march slowly, all bones stiff and sore. They're tired old heroes from a forgotten war. And the young people ask, what are they marching for? And I ask myself the same question.
This is Building 7,
but
a 47.
The band plays Waltzing Matilda, and the old men still answer the call. But as year follows year, more old men disappear. Someday no one will march there at all. Waltzing Matilda, Waltzing Matilda, who come waltzing Matilda with me? And their ghosts may be heard as they march by that billabong. Who come waltzing Matilda with me?
We're back. You're with Truth News Radio, Hereward Fenton and Joshua Jackson. Josh, I want to run something past you. At the beginning of the show, I was talking about this problem of what can we do, you know, like, and this problem being that we're not doing enough. And it's true, we're not, okay. And I admit it myself, I'm not doing enough. But what is it that you've got to do? This is the question. Now, I made some suggestions before about movements you can join, because, I mean, the 9/11 Truth Movement, coming up to the 10th anniversary of 9/11, the 9/11 Truth Movement, as I've said, is central to counteracting the core myths and the core lies and the core criminality and perversity of the military-industrial complex, New World Order, call it what you will, that is now dominating the planet. The 9/11 Truth Movement is central to that.
The thing with the 9/11 Truth Movement is that, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's 10 years old and get over it, it's moved on, but it's still as funny. I mean, you know, how old's the story of Christ? I mean, and people are still going on about that. So, you know, it's never
good
too...
Good point.
An important event is never too late to be talked about and to be discussed. And the deception, the reason why it's so important is the deception was so huge, and it needs to be exposed so that people don't feel like they are some weird conspiracy theorist for questioning those events, because that whole meme of conspiracy theorist is a way to crush dissent, but not by using force, not by using a central state, but by using the common people to basically put other people down. So you feel scared to go up to your friend and say, oh, look, by the way, not an inside job, but you don't even have to go that far. You could just have to go, look, I think there's a lot of dodgy things behind that event, and it's so important that we talk and discuss these issues.
We have to regain the moral high ground on this. They've taken the moral high ground, and they've distorted it with their fake morality, with their twisted morality, whether they launch a war and they bomb civilians and they call it humanitarian. They talk about saving the environment, and then they pitch things like coal seam gas as clean energy, when coal seam gas is just poisoning the water table. You know, that's why coal seam gas was brought in. They called it clean energy.
And you have this whole ridiculous thing of major carbon taxes and major pollution regulations. Then you have us just going to wars, dropping depleted uranium tipped bullets and bombs on countries, which is going up to the upper stratosphere and raining down on all our crops, where huge amounts of pollution from the war machine, massive amounts. I mean, the biggest polluter on Earth, I'd have to say, and hardcore polluter as well, in terms of, you know, radiation and stuff that has a half life of, you know, too long.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, this
a long time
notion. But going back to saying what can we do about it, I think joining groups is all good. But you really have to look at your own life and how you interact with your own life and who you interact with and what you consume. Because I'm coming from a more voluntarist position, anarcho-capitalistic position where I am the only vote I've really got is my dollar, is the gold in my pocket, is the coin in my pocket, because the vote in the voting booth really, they're all bought and paid for. So by you ticking a little box doesn't change anything. And look, I mean, you just have to look at the Obama administration. Remember all the hype and the joy and the hope and the change that we were going to get from Obama. We were going to pull out of all these wars. You know what's happened now? Well, we're in new wars. The old wars have continued. Guantanamo is still open. The machine just keeps on going. They are not for the people. They are bought and paid for. So the only vote you have is the vote with your dollar. So vote by doing your shopping at local markets and shopping from local farmers. Do things like this. These are the changes that you can definitely do right now, and they do make a huge difference by supporting your local area, by being non-violent to the children around us and having peaceful parenting, so that the next generation grows up not to have this fear of authority, but to question authority. And
stand up for your rights, though. Stand up for your rights. And I really mean that. You know, it sounds like a cliche, okay, but it really isn't happening. I'm seeing it, right, because I work in the real world, right, and I'm seeing just old-style bullying, old-style lying, old-style, you know, corporate domination and monopolies and robber barons. Just, I mean, typically the way the big corporations work these days, right, is this. There's a simulation of free enterprise. And, of course, you know, there was a debate today, in fact, in Parliament regarding the NBN, another huge topic that we're going to have to do a whole show on soon. But the NBN is being opposed in a weak way by the Liberal Party, because they're saying, look, there needs to be more free enterprise. And then, you know, they're trying to introduce bills that would allow competition rather than have the government just supply the backbone and the internet services completely at taxpayer expense.
Well,
meaning,
you know, this
meaning
was
free.
A whole big scam because it couldn't get the clean feed in.
Exactly.
Couldn't get the clean feed in. So instead of trying to develop the old system, they'll just go, hey, guess what? We'll give you a faster internet. We'll give you a faster internet and never mention a clean feed again. But you know what? The NBN will have a clean feed. It will be the clean feed.
Oh, they'll own the infrastructure. And it would be ridiculous to assume if they own the infrastructure that they wouldn't put a filtering mechanism in. Because
especially if Conroy was in charge of the whole rollout.
Well, yeah. And of course, you know, if you own the infrastructure, you'd do that. I mean, that's one of the things that there's not much point in owning the infrastructure unless you do that. That's the reason you'd want to own the infrastructure. Otherwise, you would leave it to free enterprise. But of course,
you know, the laughable thing about it all is that Telstra is coming out right now with a 4G network, which is even faster than the NBN, and it's wireless.
Well, this is actually in Parliament today. This exact topic was being debated. But of course, the Liberals are only offering kind of – they're fiddling around the edges of it, right?
Oh, the Liberals want it just as much.
Yeah.
You know, this whole notion that, the Liberals don't want a clean feed. They want a clean feed more than anyone.
And, well, they want a clean feed, and they also want to support a monopolistic corporatist solution. You see, they call it free enterprise, but what they do is they'd have some giant corporation like Optus running it. You know, Optus versus Telstra.
They have their mates running it.
Yeah, and then they say
that have been in part, but this sort of revolving door of corporatism.
Yeah, I mean, we're supposed to believe there's free enterprise because we've got Optus and Telstra. You know.
Yeah.
It's you know, but where was I? I was just trying to talk about this concept of the free market and how it's not really being encouraged by either side because of this corporatist ethos that is dominating everything. And typically what they do, these large monopolistic corporate organizations, is that they want to control everything. They want to have a finger in every possible pie they can, right? Mm. I mean, look what Google is doing at the moment. They're trying to get into everything. They're trying to own mobile phones. They're trying to own mobile phone operating systems. They're trying to own social networking. Mm. They and it's ridiculous because there's no way they can do all that well. You know, they did some things well. Google did some things well, right? But
at least with Google is they're actually trying it in a free market. And you see things like they try Buzz. They try to take over like Google Buzz, but it fails because people don't like it. So it fails. But when you get the corporatist thing where the state steps in and says, hey, this is the only option. You have to use this, like with the NBN,
I tend to think that Google is pretty much along those lines. It's just done in a different way. It's American style. But look at News Limited, News International, the great Murdoch empire. They basically like to own all these brands. They like to dominate a market by just buying up brands and sitting on them. And what does that do? It stifles innovation. It creates all these fake businesses that are only put there to be like market placement holders, right? To say, we own this, we own this, we own this. And because they own so much of the economy, because they dominate the economy so much, it stifles real innovation. It's really hard to get around it. You know what I mean? And that's the corporatist attitude. It's control. They want to control everything. And of course, they want to control us. They want to control people, life, death, the planet. And that's what we've got to now. It's just got worse and worse and worse. But where am I headed with this? I'm trying to point out that we do have an ability to do something about it. We do have an ability. Now, Josh, you've pointed out the voluntarist approach. I've got a few other ideas. I think we have to leave you at this point.
All right. Well, folks, please get onto the by supporting the show, get onto the website and leave some comments.
Josh, we'll get you back on very soon.
Thanks, mate.
Have a good night.
Cheers, bye.
You've seen those headlines about global warming. The glaciers are melting. We're doomed. That's what several studies supposedly found. But other scientific studies found exactly the opposite. Greenland's glaciers are growing, not melting. The Antarctic ice sheet is getting thicker, not thinner. Did you see any big headlines about that? Why are they trying to scare us? Global warming alarmists claim the glaciers are melting because of carbon dioxide from the fuels we use. Let's force people to cut back, they say. But we depend on those fuels to grow our food, move our children, light up our lives. And as for carbon dioxide, it isn't smog or smoke. It's what we breathe out and plants breathe in. Carbon dioxide, they call it pollution. We call it life.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this last segment, I just want to talk a little bit about the concept of civil disobedience. This is where I was headed just at the end there when Josh had to leave us. The concept of civil disobedience. I do believe that in order for us to effect change, we need to engage in civil disobedience. And I don't want to encourage anyone to do anything violent. I don't want to encourage anyone to do anything that would hurt another person or an animal or destroy property. But there are many things that you can do that are incredibly disruptive to the smooth working of the overarching tyrannical super state. That are available to you and to me. And I want to explore, and I'm quite open to any ideas that you might have if you'd like to suggest some things. But we need to actually start thinking more about civil disobedience. And part of the reason why I'm saying this is that the famous convoy that was headed down to Canberra, the Convoy of No Confidence, which was this great collection of trucks and vehicles which was headed down to Canberra, failed to make much of an impact. And part of the reason for that actually was that they went to great lengths to not be disruptive. They went to great lengths to cooperate with the police, to avoid clogging the roads, and to follow directions, etc. And they were laughed at as a result of that. It was in Parliament. I listened to the dismissive words and the terms like whingers and convoy of no consequence, and you know the representation of these people as being totally irrelevant and having no impact. And part of that is because they tried so hard not to be disruptive. So when we talk about civil disobedience and non-violence, yes, you do have to be disruptive. You've got to be disruptive. Being disruptive is not the same as being violent. Of course, the government will make you think it's the same, and they will try to blend the two. So if the protests down in Canberra had been disruptive, they would have framed it as extremists, you know, causing a terrible, terrible problem for Canberra, and they would have magnified that. But because everyone was being cooperative and didn't do anything that was disruptive, they said, oh, well, it was just useless, you know. I mean, I've got a few stories here. We've got No Confidence Convoy is a no-show. Country towns have been left with a huge cleanup bill and piles of unused food after thousands of truck drivers rallying against the federal government failed to show up. Protesters lacked any real focus. What a miserable bunch came out today, tooting for Monday's fizzer of an event, the Convoy of No Confidence. Now, I won't read any more of that article. It's a hit piece, but it it magnifies and exaggerates some aspects of these movements, which the only part of it which is true is that there really weren't the numbers and they didn't make a big enough impact. Now, I just want to, by contrast, now read to you an article from Joanne Nova. Here it is. Giant PR machine swings into gear against the convoy. Now, this is an article from the 23rd of August, which is just yesterday. It's important for the big government-dependent parties to deny the power of the convoy. Less than a week ago, there was a rally at Parliament House with around 3,000 to 5,000 people. And today there was another one, this one with around 600 vehicles, according to Matt and Janet Thompson. And this one by people who have gone to extraordinary lengths, driving up to 5,000 kilometres from all corners of the country. The convoy is a rolling protest that involved thousands of people across the nation. In Sydney, people switched their headlights on in sympathy, and Andrew Bolt records at least one witness suggesting that half the cars on the road had their headlights on. Feelings and support for the convoy are widespread and running high. One of the convoy's supporters from near Clermont reports, "In only 24 hours, we gathered 300 signatures for the petition. Local beef producers had organised fuel donations of over $13,000 and the CWA had organised food and drinks for everyone on the convoy. This support from a town of only 2,000 was amazing and a testament to a united effort." Dale Stiller's comment is typical on just grounds. "The convoy had experienced nothing but support. There have been flags, balloons and ribbons on gates, signs and fences all the way from Rockhampton to Goondiwindi. Other trucks, as they pass on the highway, are on the two-way, wishing the convoy well and, of course, often accompanied by a blast of air horns. The bottom line is that the nation supports the convoy. There are over 100,000 votes on the 9MSN poll and 80% are with the trucks." So still reading here from Joanne Nova. "So what do you do when hundreds of cars, trucks and vans descend on the parliament in a historic move from all over the country demanding an election? If you are the ABC, you call it 200 trucks, don't mention the cars, feature those who have an interest in putting down the protest, such as Bob Brown, and make sure you mention how it was smaller than expected, when actually it started as one driver and thousands of people joined in. The ABC coverage is so shamefully biased. A government PR agency could hardly have done a better job. They carefully avoided selecting any of the key messages in the speeches or petition, but they put in any odd, unconnected grievance they could find. They didn't interview the organisers, instead just showing a snippet of a song and a truckie tooting. The ABC report didn't ask a single driver why they had felt it was necessary to take such extraordinary action." Now, Joanne goes on here to talk about what she thinks needs to be done, and she is now talking about focusing on the ABC itself. "It's time we protested about the ABC. What's the point in protesting about the government if it won't be reported accurately by the main Australian taxpayer-funded broadcaster? Solve the ABC problem first, then the other problem, inept, self-serving governments, will tend to solve itself. It's time to demand better reporting or get our tax money back." Now, I totally agree with that. We need to reform the ABC. And that's another thing that we can think about focusing on. We can think about building a movement which would possibly include people from a wide spectrum of issues, to focus on how the ABC has broken its mandate, broken its charter, is not serving the interests of the people. And I don't think it should be shut down. I think it should be reformed. It should be returned to what its function is, which is to reflect the interests of the Australian people. So that is something that I think we need to think about building a movement around. And if you think about all the shows that we've done on Truth News, that almost one thing they have in common, it's quite amazing, is that they've been the subject of bias, and particularly bias by the ABC. I mean, you know, so many of these pseudoscientific topics about vaccines and psychiatric medicines, Chappelle Corby, genetically modified foods, of course the 9/11 questions. And it goes on. It's hard to actually get all of those different issues that we've covered in my head at one point. And there are many, many, many more. And I would suggest, you know, go through our archives and look at all the things we've covered, and then consider how these have been the subject of ongoing bias from our national taxpayer-funded broadcaster. And let's think about that. Let's think about what we can do. Let's try and build a movement, a real movement, with a sensible goal. Well, that's about it for tonight. It's been a pretty intense show. I hope that it's had some impact. I hope that you can take some ideas from that and make them real. See you next week.